ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Kirk Herbstreit and Matt Barry.
You know it. You love it. It's a Monday tradition unlike any other. Matt Barry, Kirk Herbstreit in the ESPN College Football Podcast. Kirk, for the third consecutive week, the greatest sport on the planet did not disappoint. Let us start where you were at the whiteout and Penn State rising to the occasion to take down Auburn.
Well, I want to ask you what you thought. I mean, as a viewer just watching, it was glorious as it was to be standing there talking about the game and just taking it all in. I mean, it's very rare in our business for you and I that a sporting event gets so much hype and build up. And there's typically there's somewhat of a letdown because there's almost unrealistic expectations. But what was it like as a viewer? I know you guys are in a studio and you're doing updates. It's a little bit different than sitting at home watching a game. But what do you think?
I thought that I knew I missed fans last year.
Exactly.
But I knew it when I saw some of your guys' camera shots over the stadium with the sun setting in Happy Valley and everybody just going nuts. And it just, it lends itself to, you know, you hear about the whiteout all the time, but when you have to take a year off and make everything quiet, the quiet is almost deafening. And then you get the decibel level back. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was absolutely incredible. That's the first part of how I thought just the beauty of the sport was on display last night. And then I thought the bad of the sport was on display last night, because you can't sit here and tell me that was targeting on Zakobi.
Right.
You can't. Like there was so much good in that, Kirk. Then there was the bad, but it was a beautiful night for college football.
Yeah. Yeah. That targeting thing. I even brought it up on the air. I'm just a little confused with that. But let me just say that I'm with you. I mean, for me, it is very, very similar feelings. I think just being there, I called Ohio State Penn State game in there last year when there was just family that was allowed to go in there. And so it was probably of all the games I called, and I called several in empty stadiums, but that game, for whatever reason, because you know what you're used to in there with a whiteout, and to just have family there, it was probably the most eerie game that Chris and I called all year. And then to fast forward to this year and to be able to have those fans and to have that whiteout in the student section and Sweet Caroline. And I try to say all week to people, especially Auburn fans and SEC fans, I don't think anybody's claiming this is the loudest stadium or the loudest, you know, scene in college football. I mean, the Swamp was rocking on Saturday. Yeah. We know the Swamp. We know about Death Valley at LSU. We know a lot of these places in the SEC. So Auburn's used to it. I think for me, it's 108,000 people in the choreography. You know, they're all in white. Like, nobody missed the memo. Like, everybody is in white, unless you were in orange. And Auburn, congratulations, by the way, on how many fans they brought to that game. That was the most anticipated non-conference game that they've had since whenever. I mean, that was an incredible effort for them, and I hope they enjoyed themselves. But it wasn't so much that – it is loud, obviously, but it's just – it's a spectacle. It's just so cool to see it. And then these teams played their hearts out.
Oh, man.
I mean, Bo Nix in a new offense, I think there's a lot to like where he's headed right now with Bobo and Harsin. Tank Bigsby running the football. They're only going to get better and better. Their young receivers kind of grew up last night right before our eyes. So I'm excited to kind of see where Auburn goes from here. And then here comes Penn State, a team that started at 0-5 and made a change at offensive coordinator and brought Mike Yurcich in. And you could just see within the first series, woo, this looks like the way Joe Moorhead used to do it, you know? And they're aggressive. They're up tempo. They're spreading you horizontally, spreading you vertically. Clifford is in command. There could be a tough out, man. You start looking at some of the games. They've already won in Madison. Now they just knocked off Auburn. They're going to be a fun team to watch grow. I'm not putting them in a Big Ten championship or anything like that, but they got Indiana coming up at home. They got to go to Iowa, which will be a tough game. You talk about a hyped up game on October 9th. They got to go to Ohio State a couple weeks after that. Even going to Maryland this year might not be an easy thing. They got Michigan at home. They go to Michigan State. So trust me, no one's celebrating that they've already they're in the clubhouse. But man, I like this team. I like how they play defense, and they've been tested. They're battle tested two of 3 weeks. So Penn State folks should be fired up for what they're looking at right now.
tested is such a great word, Kirk, because I mean, they tried out Noah Cain, Jahad Dotson, Sean Clifford's not making mistakes. And so you talk about those three guys and then physically what they're able to do defensively. I mean, when you just listed off that schedule, the first thing that came to mind is like, oh, hell, they've got some big games to play. Because Indiana, despite what happened yesterday against Cincinnati, they're not an easy out. But when you start listing Michigan State with what Mel Tucker has going on, Jim Harbaugh scoring points, Ohio State's going to be Ohio State. I mean, like you, the Big Ten, when you give me that body of work, that league right now, it is so top to bottom strong. It's a good league now coming out of week three.
It is, you know, in Ohio State, who is looked at as the behemoth, you know, they went 41-20 and there are a lot of people that are like, man, what is wrong with the Buckeyes? And I'm right there with you. I'm not saying they're immune to mistakes. I mean, they're still trying to figure out their defense. I don't know if it's something you can fix, to be candid. I don't know if you can fix it in the middle of a season. You can tweak it, like Ryan Day's mentioned. You can try to make some changes to the staff. But you've kind of trained these guys to be a single high defense, which means cover three or that's cover three is a zone defense with a lot of deep coverage, trying to prevent the big play, or cover one, man free, where against Oregon, they were picked on. And so it's hard for people that don't understand. It's not something that you drill and it's your DNA and that's who you are. And then no problem playing Tulsa. Let's go to a quarters coverage or let's go to cover two. Or that takes a year of training and they'll play some, but I mean, to be really good and confident in it, it takes a spring ball and implement a defense and work on technique. And okay, let's say you funnel a receiver and you get back in position. Your eyes need to be here. It's not just, hey, you know, on a Thursday, we're going to play cover two now. We're going to play some quarters. So the point is, no matter who's calling the defense, whether it's Matt Barnes in secondary or it's Kerry Coombs, whoever's going to do it, it puts them in a tough spot to have to tweak things. So they've got their hands full the rest of the year. And then I think Ryan Day, to me, I don't know how you felt, he spent a lot of time during teamwork this week with the defense.
Yeah.
And I think it showed on the offense.
Yep, I agree. And you could tell.
They were almost just like, I don't know. It just didn't have a rhythm to it. I mean, Trevon Henderson, as we said in preseason, this kid's going to be, you know, Zeke Elliott, J.K. Dobbins, Henderson. He's in that type of guy. He's a freak.
Yeah.
So he made a lot of things look good, but they were out of rhythm. And they got to find themselves because obviously it's going to get a lot tougher when they get in conference play.
It reminded me Big Ten championship when Fields was off and it was like, just give the ball to Trey Sermon. Like Trey's going to fix everything. And I think that's a good sign of a good team and good coach. And it's like, hey, we're out of sync. We're out of rhythm. We're kind of sputtering around the field. I've got the best running back. I got the best player in the field right now in Henderson. Just feed the freshman the ball. 277 broke Archie's freshman record. Yeah. Like just get what you have to do to get done.
Yeah. Yeah. And Matt, you go to your point, you start to look at that Big Ten and in the East alone with Penn State and Ohio State and Michigan. I mean, it's early, but I don't care if it's early. This is the best they've looked that I can remember in three games. I don't care if it's inter-squad scrimmage. I don't care if it's against the scout team. I don't care who they're playing. They are executing. Blake Corum, Haskins, that 1-2 punch. Corum gives you some juice we've not seen since the running back coach, Mike Hart, has given them. That just feels different as far as the big playability, and Haskins is a pounder. I love watching those two guys work together. And Cade McNamara, he's taking care of the ball, and we're finding some young receivers that have stepped up with Ronnie Bell down. So they look good. And again, it's going to get obviously a lot tougher for them. But you look at Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, you got Maryland that's 3-0. Michigan State.
How about locks? Yeah.
I mean, they're winning games. Indiana, you don't want to leap on Tom Allen. You know his team's not going to go away. That's just in the Big Ten East. And you got Iowa. The West doesn't have the depth, obviously. Wisconsin, I think, is a better team than maybe people are willing to give them credit. But the Big Ten is off to a really good start first 3 weeks of the season.
You know what I learned yesterday, because I didn't want to watch once it got to 21-3 at the Swamp, Alabama and Florida, you know what I didn't want? I didn't want to turn my head and have it be 35-3.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And it wasn't. And give Florida all the credit, Emory Jones. Oh, okay. You know, Anthony didn't play S.A. Robinson. But what happened, Kirk, is what we learned yesterday, particularly within that top eight cluster, this thing perhaps is more wide open than we thought it would be. And I love that because we were thinking it's just going to be Alabama and everybody else, maybe Georgia in there. Alabama had to sneak away. Oklahoma had to sneak away. Georgia had South Carolina. We knew that was going to be tough. But this could be a little more wide open than we thought at the beginning of the season based on just what we saw Saturday.
21-3, and you're thinking, like you exactly like you said, I think we were all talking to each other in the back of the bus. People are, you're doing updates. We're doing – you know, sending a tweet out. Well, you know, besides Alabama, they're in their own class. You know, let's talk about some of these other teams and some of these other games, because 21-3, you're right. It felt like I'm going to go get something to drink and come back and it's going to be 35-3. And man, you know, it's Bryce Young passed the test. You know, this defense is that good. You just said it, and I hope fans would agree. I didn't take away from it like what's wrong necessarily with Alabama. I took away from it like, damn, there goes Dan Mullen again.
Yep.
There goes Dan Mullen. There's Dan Mullen reminding people he is a great coach. And we went into that game thinking kind of limited as far as balance. I went all the way back to 2016 on my game day tape, showed Nick Fitzgerald running the football at Mississippi State. Because I said, that's kind of where he is. He's got to go back to that playbook because they lost Grimes and Pitts and Tony and Trask and 400 yards of passing yards against Alabama and Atlanta last year. You're like, now they got Emory Jones, who up to this point, I think he had 2 touchdowns and 4 interceptions. It ain't happening through the air with Emory Jones. And he's looking at that going into this game, and he's down 21-3. I mean, think about that. And he manages to get his team and the players, of course, but the scheme and the play calling, he gets his team to all of a sudden get a little bit of confidence. All of a sudden, it started to feel like before it got really close, man, Florida's starting to kind of get some traction here at the line of scrimmage. They're starting to get some confidence. The crowd's starting to get back into the game to help the defense out. This is getting a little bit interesting. You know, let's stay tuned here. This is early in the third quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes down to the wire. So I think I walk away from that. Yeah, Alabama survived. Alabama maybe is people can maybe reach up to them this year. They don't have Jaden Waddle. They don't have Smith, you know, Devontae Smith that can just – you know, blink of an eye, boom, 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 boom. There's touchdowns, Mac Jones, everything's simple.
Great. Najee, all those guys.
Yeah, Najee. You don't have that. And so they have talented players, but they're learning. And that was a tough environment. I walked away thinking, okay, Georgia.
Yep.
Okay, Georgia. Okay. We were already putting you in Atlanta. That's a mistake. We just always get reminders in this sport. Like, just when you think I know, you don't know. You really don't.
And that's what I love about it, because we could even sit and look it out at Georgia and say, okay, well, who are they really offensively? You know, they've got Zamir and JT shows flashes, but we know they're led by their defense. But we could all sit here and say their deficiency right now is offensively. And so even with these top 5-6 teams, you can find something that could get each of them beat every single week. And I think through week 3 of the season, I think it was perfectly said, we think we know. We thought we knew. Yeah. And then I'm sitting here today. I'm like, well, you know what? The fact that we kind of don't know makes it better as we round out September. Yeah.
Oh, it's so good. You know, remember those days last year, the year before that? You get to week 4. It's like, okay, Alabama and Ohio State and Clemson are in. Who's going to be that fourth team, you think?
Yep.
It's like, oh, okay, let's just cancel the season. What the hell? those three are in. I don't feel like that at all.
No.
I mean, watching Florida and Alabama, I'm not saying, anybody can play with Alabama. I'm not saying that at all, because Florida's a good team and you don't go to the Swamp and just walk in there and you know, think that you're going to be able to dominate them. Florida is a tough place to play, but I think that was Florida's not into having moral victories, but Florida's got to feel really good about that game. And they had some missed opportunities, or maybe they win the game, but I'm just, my personal feeling is Dan Mullen is a hell of a coach. He works like a magician when it comes to quarterback play. And I'm excited to kind of see not only where Florida goes, but the entire SEC with the way Auburn played. We just kind of talked about Auburn and how they're going to be a real factor, you know, as far as competition in that division. Ole Miss. Yeah. I mean, they're fun. We got Arkansas. We got A&M that it's, I feel like a lot of people just kind of like, okay, A&M's, they're done. Meanwhile, they're 3-0. And another guy that works great with quarterbacks is working with a backup guy and Jimbo Fisher and give him time. But there's a lot of depth in the West. Now we have Florida and we have Georgia, Kentucky. Again, not a lot of people yet kind of paying attention to them. So much like we're talking about with the Big Ten, the SEC is really setting up for some challenging weeks. Who can survive, you know, week in and week out on the road, tough environments. Arkansas and Ole Miss are kind of like, to me, the teams that we've just kind of sprinkled in, and along with Florida, maybe we kind of sprinkled in what we thought we knew in preseason to where we are now 3 weeks later.
Yeah. They're like the Tabasco. It's like, we've got this meal and we're going to throw you some, they're going to give you a dash of Arkansas and Ole Miss just to screw with you, spice it up a little bit, make this thing fun. I'll tell you, no one, we'll get to Fresno State, UCLA in a minute as far as fighting for a victory, but I don't think anyone fought harder for a better win yesterday than Cincinnati on the road in Indiana. And the way that started for Luke Fickell, Desmond Ridder looked lost. And that targeting penalty, which Fickell said after the game was kind of the thing that kind of jump-started him a little bit. Cincinnati took every punch that Indiana had, established themselves. Kirk, they walked out of there 38-24, really now saying, you know what? We had our backs against the wall multiple times on Saturday. We got out of there with the win. Let's go. Notre Dame's up next.
And I haven't looked at the stat sheet, but just watching the game, how many times did you feel like the Cincinnati defense in the red zone made a play early in that game where it felt like, is it 21-0? I mean, could it be 17-0? Like, that's what it felt like. Yep. It could have been, but they had an interception. They had a turnover on downs and Indiana was very aggressive. You got to love Tom Allen's attitude. You know, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to be attacking. And it showed. He had his team really well prepared. I think the targeting call definitely turned the game around and got Cincinnati feeling that, okay, we're going to be okay. We're going to get our legs under us and be able to start to sustain some drives. Ridder started to play better. They started to get a little bit more from Jerome Ford. But this was a lot of buildup for UC. This was a lot of, from the Sugar Bowl on, 20 starters back on a team that finished in the top 10. And here they come, preseason top 10. Got Indiana, you got Notre Dame on the schedule, and it's a different world. You and I talked about this, a different kind of pressure for Iowa State. It's a different kind of pressure for Cincinnati. Even last, you know, I think you could say for UCLA, so they get some hoopla. It's like, it's just different. And I think Cincinnati felt like, okay, winning isn't enough going into the game. We need to look good doing this to show people we are worthy of this. And they just looked out of sorts. They Ridder wasn't playing well. They're getting blown up at the line of scrimmage. I will say this little sidebar. They need to clean kind of their act up. I mean, I know they play tough. I know that's their – Luke Fickell encourages tough, nasty behavior, competitive spirit. I love that. But you got to draw a line on where you go too far. When you start hurting the team – because you're talking every play, or you make a play in the end zone, an interception, you rip your helmet off. And now a team that can't get good field position, instead of starting at the 20 or 25, now they're back at their own 10 because of a dead ball personal foul. There are a number of times that it could have been called for more penalties. Mm-hmm. So if you want to rub shoulders with the big boys, kind of act like you've been there a little bit and play with that edge. Play with that attitude, which is great, but learn to like act like you've been there a bit and play with some poise. I just thought that was a little bit too much for me watching that game. And pre-game, you know, they're on the field, both teams ready to fight. I mean, I know as fans, oh man, this is going to be chippy. This is going to be fun, but I don't know. You got to be better than that in my mind, and give them credit. They found a way to win the game. They got a week off. Then they go to South Bend and another opportunity to send a message, but the cool thing for Luke Fickell is they can go back and look at film and they can say, hey guys, we won and we beat a good team, but look at this. And
what, is coach.
Yeah. What is that? What is this? We can't go to Indiana. We can't go to South Bend and do this. Like, let's clean this up. Let's go. We're better. We're so much better than we played, and we beat Indiana, and we're going to have to be better to beat Notre Dame. So I'm fired up. Can't wait to watch that game. That'll be a good one coming up. When would that be? October 2nd, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It's those extracurriculars you talk about, because I mean, you know, this, they're doing that us against the world thing. Like no one buys in. Well, there's a way to show that you belong just by beating the guy in front of you. You don't need to thump your chest and mouth off, because I get it. You don't feel like you're respected. Well, final score in football will get you the respect.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, I'm seeing a lot of that in college football, like defensive backs, especially. Like, they'll knock a ball away and they want to let the receiver know that they just made a play on them. Hey, bud, that's what you're supposed to do. Like, I always say, we're not at Beaverton, Oregon. Like, this isn't the opening and you're in a pair of skivvies playing 7-on-7 against other high school All-Americans. That's where this stuff gets created, is in high school football with all these summer camps. Mm-hmm. And the skill guys, it becomes part of the culture, part of that world. Because I've watched it and it's encouraged in that world. And then they come into the real world and they try to continue with those antics. I just don't think it's good for the game. I think it's an ugly look. And coaches need to do a better job of controlling it in practice, and so it doesn't carry over and then misrepresent your brand in a game. And again, I'm not naive. I know you want guys to play with an edge. We all want defensive backs to play with an edge. But there's nothing better than a guy that's playing with an edge and still just celebrates with his teammates instead of always constantly jawing at the opponent. Just drives me crazy. And I know we have a new taunting rule. I wish they really enforced it, because they're not at all. And they need to reevaluate. And I don't know how Steve Shaw and these guys get together on a weekly basis, but hold these officials accountable. Because we are not seeing it called enough, and they need to clean it up, because it's embarrassing to the sport.
There was a play last night in an otherwise, you know, non-dramatic game between Georgia and South Carolina. And South Carolina was trying to get a little something going. And there was a Doty threw a pass. I forget who the kid was. It was like a 25-yard gain. It was a well-executed play. Well, what does the receiver do in a game they're getting pummeled? Catches the ball. Great catch. Great execution. Okay, Shane Beamer, just let's get out of here with some momentum. Receiver stands up over the DB and just gives him like a what? Well, what happens then? Official flags him.
Good, good.
Takes the yardage away and takes the great positive execution. Of the,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Because it's like.
And what was the score of the game?
It was out of control at that point.
Yeah. And the team that was being humiliated, he's the one that did that, because he won a one-on-one individual battle. Losing by 30, he decided that was the appropriate time to do that, right?
Right. Instead of just catch the ball. Hey, we got a little something going here. We found a little chemistry with the quarterback. Yeah. Let's go back to the huddle.
Great job by the official taking that moment away from him. I missed that play. I'm glad to hear that. How about Rambo from Miami made a play. They're losing to Michigan State at home. They score a touchdown trying to get back into the game. And he's drawn, you know, to the camera. He's drawn to anybody he can find. It's like, bro, just catch the ball, score, you're trailing, go to the sideline. Let's try to get the defense, make a stop and get the ball back. So it's an epidemic. It's all over the sport, and these officials got to do a good job of being more consistent, trying to let these guys know that this doesn't fly. You can't do this.
And meanwhile, Michigan State's not doing it. They're just kicking Miami's teeth.
Exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Hey, you do all that. We're going to come over here.
Yeah.
We're gonna run the ball down your throat.
Yeah.
We're going to make you never see that turnover chain again. And that's kind of where the whole thing, it's symptomatic when that started. Then now you've got, you know, the Tulsa players yesterday, they've got their own thing with a fedora. And I don't want to be off my lawn guy, but at some point,
it's stupid.
Finish it.
Well, it's stupid. Like, Miami's playing Alabama. They're down by 30. They get a turnover. They can run to the sideline and put the chain on. Huh? What? You're down 30. That cancels out the chain, the turnover chain. So hopefully Like I said, Steve Shaw and the officials will do a better job on a national level of trying to let these players know that the smallest move in this area is going to get a penalty.
As we continue to move through the weekend, is there, you know, we said this with the Big Ten, we touched on it with the SEC, but based on what we saw with Clemson and Georgia Tech, I know there was the big delay, but they're just not offensively. I mean, they still haven't given up a touchdown all year defensively, but offensively, they're just kind of off. And then we see North Carolina do what they did to Virginia. You can't sit here this week and convince me that the ACC still is wide open based on output from Clemson relative to what North Carolina seemed to find.
Yeah. You know, I think there's a little bit of a trend. You know, Ohio State, I thought Ryan Day made a good point. He said, this is not all of a sudden like, oh gosh, you know, what's happening? Oregon made some plays. He said, this was something that has been kind of been happening for a while and a trend in our defense. And I think the same thing can be said about Clemson with their offensive line play and their inability to run the football. I think Georgia Tech, they just said, listen, we don't want these big, tall receivers to get behind us. We're just going to kind of play real soft in coverage and let them run the ball. And quarterback runs not been a big thing for them. So let's just take our chances and see what will happen against Will Shipley. And if DJ is going to run, let's be ready to defend that. But we're not going to give up any explosives. And if you're defending Clemson, that's what you're going to do right now. Mm-hmm. And if they don't have the offensive line and the running game to make people pay for that, then they're going to have some tough games, because that's going to become the book on them. Nobody wants to let Justin Ross or Nagata, those talented receivers, beat you. And Georgia Tech, give them a lot of credit. So Clemson's defense has been outstanding, championship caliber. But the offense, without obviously Trevor Lawrence, Travis Etienne and company, they're still trying to kind of find their new identity, because right now they don't have an identity. And until they get one, it's going to make things tougher on that side of the ball. And you're right about the ACC. We're kind of going around all these different conferences, but North Carolina is back in play. Virginia Tech, I thought had a you know, tough loss, even though it was non-conference. That Coastal looks like it's Carolina to me, and then everybody else.
Yep.
And then in the Atlantic, you know, we usually would say it's Clemson and everybody else, but right now I think it's Clemson, of course. And then we need to see kind of where Boston College is, where Wake is. You know, can anybody compete realistically and avoid Clemson getting back to Charlotte? I would say right now, no. But, you know, I don't think it's as much of a slam dunk the way they look offensively as it has been in years past.
Yeah, top to bottom, I still believe that league is the one that struggles the most, because you're just rattling off those teams. It's like, all right, Clemson, you Hartman and Clawson, they've got a nice thing going. Yesterday, what they did with the Florida State, they have some talent. But
Florida State and Miami, it's just so sad, man. Like where we are right now with Florida State and Miami, like your generation and my generation, that game was the game of the year. That was the game that you watched. I don't care who you're a fan of. When Florida State and Miami got together, it was showcase NFL talent, impact the national championship race. Who's the best team in the state of Florida was typically who's the best team in the country. And we're just so far from that. And I thought Florida State, after the Notre Dame game on that Sunday night, I was like, man, good for Mike Norvell. He's got a team this year that gets it. And then they lose on the last play of the game, losing overtime that night to Notre Dame, last play of the game against a inferior opponent in Jacksonville State. Heads are down. Now they got to go take on Dave Clawson and Wake Forest, who's efficient and buttoned up. And that game got sideways in a hurry. You just wonder where, after the year that they had last year, where do you go from here to try to lift the team up and get them to believe there's still something worth fighting for? It's going to be a challenge in Tallahassee the rest of the year.
Yeah, we've touched on these two programs a lot, but you're right. I mean, back in the day, you just knew that these guys were going to come out with a swagger and talent unknown to the rest of the sport. And now Miami can't get fans at their game and are getting their teeth kicked in by Michigan State after barely beating Appalachian State, after getting embarrassed to Alabama. And the reason I think the Miami side of it's inexcusable, Kirk, is because you look at their depth chart and what came back. They're not busting in a lot of new guys. I mean, they've got just about everybody back that you could have to compete, and they're just not competing.
Yeah. And De'Ara King, who I thought coming into the year was going to have a monster year. I would put him right up there with a chance to win a lot of the postseason awards. Just a real good kid and a guy that kind of gets the game and what it's about and has an appreciation for it. And just a wonderful guy. You know, he just doesn't, I don't know if he's frustrated or he's trying to make plays or they're not quite on the same page. But he's turning the ball over, which is very uncharacteristic for him. So, hey, hopefully they can get it turned.
I think
a little bit more hope with Miami than right now, Florida State. But I guess the reason I bring that up is when you eliminate Miami and Florida State and Virginia Tech from registering or mattering on a national level. And we thought we had Virginia Tech maybe back when they beat North Carolina. And then the way they've looked since then, they're not back. They're not going to be a top 20 type of team. So you eliminate the three big guns from any conference and you just kind of are forgotten about in the national narrative and discussion. And, you know, you have Clemson and then it's like, oh, here comes Mack Brown in North Carolina. Okay. And what else?
Yeah. You know, it's like, right. So now we just wait for that game in the championship and that's it.
Yeah. That's just not a lot of depth. We're sitting there bragging about the SEC and the Big Ten. And you get to that conference. It's just not right now. There's not a lot there. There's a lot more depth in the Big 12 and even the Pac-12 than what we're seeing in the ACC.
Speaking of the Pac-12, I distinctly remember the day that this kid named Sam Darnold took over at the starting quarterback job for USC. And all of a sudden they looked different. They won 9 in a row to end the season. They go to the Rose Bowl and have a great season. And people like Clay Helton, see he can get it done. I don't know. I can't put my finger on it, but I'm telling you the way USC looked the second Jackson Dart went in, they were just different. And if there's anything that came out of the Pac-12 debacle yesterday, it's that, hey, you know what? If this Dart kid is as good as he looked on the road in a wet, nasty environment, USC could be that team again, just based on that 2.5 quarters of football.
Imagine that. I mean, imagine if that were to happen. Dante Williams gets off to a great start as the, what is he, interim?
Interim head coach, yeah.
And, you know, everybody's, you know, talking about all these names all across the country that potentially could become the next USC head coach. Meanwhile, Dante Williams has, you know, an opportunity like Coach O had a few years ago to kind of say, hey, you know, before you go hire somebody, this is what I can do. You know, and you start to look at what they have left on their schedule. There's a real chance they could get on a little bit of a run before they play Utah coming up on October 9th. You know, they play Oregon State and Colorado, and then they get ready to have Utah, Notre Dame back-to-back weeks. So I'm with you. It started a little bit slow. I was being a little bit of a smart aleck, you know, on game day. I was like, they're playing. Hey, if you're going to fire a coach week two, Dante Williams and USC got just what they needed, team that they can take care of in Washington State. And then it was like, oh, no, Washington State. I was like, I don't even want to look at social media right now. I'm sure Washington State fans are like, how's that feel? And then USC kind of settled in and with Dart in there. But, yeah, let's see how he does. He had 4 touchdowns and just slinging it around. And USC, by the way, they you could say whatever you want about Southern California high school quarterbacks going to places like Ohio State or Clemson or Alabama. They still know how to recruit quarterbacks. So there's so many of them out there. You know, anybody on that roster can sling it. So we'll see if he can take the reins and do a good job for him. But they got a chance the next couple of weeks to win a couple more games.
And everything's still in front. I mean, this is so cliche, but UCLA loses to Fresno State. We knew that game was going to be tough coming in. Everything's still in front of UCLA to win the Pac-12 South. Same with Arizona State, who was sloppy. Same with USC. I mean, there's still enough football out there to where if you're one of these leagues that's got Oregon in the North, even Stanford's looking better now. Oregon's the team in the North. The South is wide open. That'll be a fun league to watch here as we wrap up in September because we just don't know enough other than Oregon.
All I know is my team of the week this past weekend was Fresno State.
Let's go.
I mean, and their quarterback, how is he not the player? That might have been the performance of the year. Unfortunately, and I don't mean this as a rip on the Pac-12 network at all, but I'm a DirecTV guy. Like at home, I have DirecTV. I would give anything to have Pac-12 network on DirecTV, but I don't. So I'm a Pac-12 guy. Like I love watching the Pac-12. So I didn't get a chance to say, I went back on Sunday morning, we get this coach's film and I went back and I watched your show. And I saw some of the highlights, but the highlights were so good. I was like, man, I need to see this whole game. So I went back and watched it and I was like, okay, UCLA, they knew this was going to be a tough game, late start. Fresno, good team, good yep. team. They took their best shot, kind of recalibrated and got their offense going. And just kind of in the second half, took the lead. You know, I don't know how much time there was when they scored and took the lead, but it was like, okay, they're fine. You know, Fresno State's going to go away. No, they're not. They just kept coming. And that kid was getting hit and just making plays. He was at Washington. I wasn't like an Elite 11 guy.
Yeah, Jake Haner, man. He was Haner. A stud. Yeah. 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 You beat me to it because I think what we saw yesterday is that the transfer portal is providing us parity. Yeah. Because Haner was never going to look at Fresno State coming out of high school. But now yeah. that's where he landed because of transferring and this, that, and the other, you're seeing a lot of these teams now compete because the portal, while there is some bad to it and kids just getting up and leaving, it provides some of these FCS and some of these lower tier FBS programs to compete now when otherwise they wouldn't be able to.
Yeah. And think about, we're talking about Cincinnati a lot. There's always a group of five team that potentially makes noise that wants respect. Well, we had this Fresno team, they played UConn, blew them out 45-0, played at Autzen against the Ducks. And we wrote it off as Oregon's peeking ahead to Ohio yeah. State. That was the problem for Oregon. They didn't respect Fresno and they were looking ahead. That's why it was 31-24. And it was Oregon got lucky to win that one late. Then they had Ohio State, Oregon did the next week. And then Fresno beats Cal Poly. And then it's, oh, okay, they're going to play UCLA. Hey, they're a good team. You know, they'll hang around with UCLA. And they take UCLA's best shot. It wasn't that UCLA was napping. They took UCLA's best shot, especially in the second half. And they get out of the Rose Bowl with a 40-37 win. And the quarterback, Jake Haner, makes plays. He's getting hit. I mean, it was like one of those moments where can he stand up? Can yep. he walk? He's taking shots. Did you ever hear what the diagnosis was? Like,
no, he just kept grabbing his lower left side. So yeah. I don't, and it was after every throw. They did a great cutaway on during the game. Cause we're watching it live there in studio at 2 a.m. and he would throw it. They would complete it and they'd do a cutaway and he would be grabbing his left side.
I couldn't tell if it was his hip, like a hip pointer, or it was his ribs, what the deal was. But, and then when the game ends, dude is flat on his stomach in the ground, just completely exhausted, as if we did it. Like I gave it everything that I had and it was just beyond exhausted. And I think good for him and everything he's been through to transfer, to go through that. He ends up coming close against Oregon. They end up beating UCLA. Bear made a bold comment to us on we have this text exchange with a bunch of people. And on Sunday, he said, out of nowhere, there was no conversation going on. He just wrote, Fresno State's better than Cincinnati. And then he wrote, there, I said it. And that's what made me between your show and Bear's text. I said, I'm going to go back and watch this because I want to see it. Because, you know, I love UCLA's potential this year. Yeah. And again, this was not bad UCLA, kind of like it wasn't bad Bama. This was good Florida. This was not bad UCLA. This was really good Fresno State. And so they deserve all the credit. And that quarterback, man, he's definitely my player of the week. Jake Haner played his tail off. And Fresno State throws their hat in the ring for that group of five. Who's the best group of five out there because of their performance against UCLA and even Oregon?
Yeah.
The fact that they lost a close one.
It's fun way to wrap up a long day of college football. I wouldn't have it any other way. Jake Haner on the turf at the Rose Bowl, just looking around saying, what the hell did we just pull off? Exactly. You beat UCLA. We'll get out of here on this one. I can't wait. College game day. You guys are going to be at Soldier Field, Notre Dame and Wisconsin. This game to me has like 17-13 written all over it at Soldier Field. That's going to be a fun week for you guys.
Oh yeah. It's going to be a scene. You know, anytime you get an unusual set up like this, it's fun. You know, we've gone up to Lambeau. We've been over to Wrigley. Lambeau was cool because it was LSU and Wisconsin.
Yeah.
At Lambeau. And now you got Wisconsin and Notre Dame, two Chicago town lums that love the city. And so many of them are going to be embracing this game. We're going to have our tailgate right in the middle, or we'll have our set right in the middle of tailgating near the lake. It's just going to be a beautiful setup. We're fired up going to Chicago. I love the city and look forward to getting in there for a couple of days and hyping up this game and, you know, so many other good games. But both teams, you know, Notre Dame is kind of living on the edge. They're sitting there at 3-0, and Wisconsin's had the setback against Penn State, you know, 1-1, and definitely need to be able to win a game. And then, of course, the twist is you got Jack Cohn, you know.
Yeah.
Not just on the Badgers roster. He was the alpha. He was the leader of that team a couple of years ago, and Grant Mertz took his job away. And from then on, you know, he just sat and then eventually moved on, transfer portal, and goes to Notre Dame, wins the job, becomes leader on this team. And now here he is with a 3-0 ball club and a team that has big aspirations and goals. And he's going up against his former team and all a lot of his buddies. So that'll be a twist to the game for sure.
What game are you on the call of next week?
West Virginia, who's coming off a huge win. Look out.
Watch out, Oklahoma.
They're going to Oklahoma. Oklahoma, they better get ready. They better get right, because West Virginia is playing with some confidence, and the players, the type of players they recruit, they love to go into these kind of atmospheres where they're an underdog, feel disrespected. West Virginia is going to show up and play with an attitude for sure.
And the last one we'll touch on for next week, let's see if Sam Pittman's got one more in him against Texas A&M. You know, Zach Calzada, the backup for A&M, they kind of sputtered against Colorado, who got beat down by Minnesota. But if KJ Jefferson and Arkansas, that SEC Tabasco we talked about, if they're going to – this will be a good one for them this week against A&M.
Again, I see A&M and Arkansas because of our age. I think Southwest Conference,
yep.
You know, but we're in the Southeast, Southeast Conference. But yeah, A&M, Arkansas, it'll be a great game. That's one that it's always played there at Jerry Jones's place. So I think it'll be a 50-50 crowd, but a good one. I also think a couple others that are, you know, Rutgers, I don't know how good they are, but Greg Schiano, you know, they're going to play Michigan, at least find out a little bit more about Michigan. And then I think Clemson going to Raleigh. I mean, you might say, you know, whoop-de-doo, but Dave Doran has a defense, and they're going to look at that game plan that Georgia Tech put together with Jeff Collins and say, hey, let's just not let them beat us with a big play, make them have to earn it. And we don't think their offensive line can beat us up. Let's contain their backs, make them drive the field on us. I think that's what they're going to face for the time being until they prove otherwise that they can handle that. And NC State can do that. So let's keep an eye on Clemson this week as well.
Final weekend of September. It will be fun, as is this podcast every Monday. Kirk, really appreciate it. Good stuff as always. Looking forward to doing this again next week when we will provide more answers on some of these great games in week 4 of the college football season.
Have a great week.